for all of us listening.
It's Bill.
Alan.
Bill.
Bill.
And Bill. Bill should be here. Someone should be here, too.
We have enough people for approval of minutes for February 5th and March 5th.
I move approval.
I second that.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Start with County Health. And Joe, I'll let you do the introductions.
Thank you.
Joe's leaving us.
Yes.
And Bill's coming in.
You let out his punch.
Right now, so we might want to pause 2 minutes.
Okay.
Packet's right there.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, right on the table there. Behind you.
Oh, over there.
Yep.
The other behind me.
I've been solving your affordable housing problem.
And before that, it was marijuana. And before that, it was... What did we start with this morning?
I forget what you weren't doing it.
Trying to solve the problem.
Climate change?
Huh? Yeah, that's a good one. It's natural.
So, for our update for public health, as John said, I think about 9 months ago, the thing with Gary Bickett kind of turned over staffing SWAC to me. And there's nothing that might change. It's always coming at us. So I'm actually shifting over to some different programs within public health, food safety, and water recreation. And I'm glad to introduce Mr. Chuck Hartman, who has come to, and he'll be the staffing the SWAC for Clark County Public Health from here on out. And it's a lot of change for this position. Gary, I mean, he was staffing this group for 20 years, or yeah, 20 plus years. So I had a 9 month stint. Now Chuck will be here for another 25 years.
Yeah,
all right.
So, but Chuck wanted to give just a brief intro and then has a few updates from public health.
Yeah, so hey, I'm glad to join the group, and I look forward to getting to know you guys a little more over the next few months. I'll definitely be coming to the next few months to learn more. I started March 16th, so I'm into week three now, and really enjoying it. I think we've got a lot of good staff and a lot of good other managers, so I think it was a good move to come to County Health. I prior was over working in Portland for the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. And the last work that I was doing there was in the cleanup program, overseeing large cleanup sites, large to small cleanup sites. And I've done some other work in the water quality department of ag for a while before that. So looking forward to this experience and working in this program and with the folks from Environmental Services also. So right now, just a couple quick things that we wanted to mention. One is our solid waste enforcement grant application has gone in to support the FTE that we have in-house for that. So it has been accepted. Now, at the legislative level, the House, I guess, introduced half the budget for that grant program that goes out to the communities. So we're going to wait and just see how the legislative process plays out and follow that. Hopefully there won't be any change, but if there is, we'll just have to figure out how to manage to that. Secondly, we did meet out. My first official landfill visit here was out at Circle C, and we're now working with them along with Ecology. Two gentlemen, I forget their last names, Bill and Tom, from Ecology were out there with us to kind of talk about post-closure, how can we get to final determinations on that landfill. And so that process will be moving forward, I think, certainly over the next year with them. And then finally, our hazard site assessment grant that we apply for. We'll be getting that together and getting that out within the next few weeks. So that's what's happening right now. And then either now or later, if you guys have any questions, please direct them to me and I'll try to help out.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Nobody can say?
Nope.
Nobody can say.
Got real lonesome here. All's well in the city.
Oh, okay. Thank you. And, well, it's better than the Department of Ecology. We don't have them. County Environmental Services.
Sure. And we can pinch back, because I think Rich is expected. We had just a couple quick updates in your packets. Our Recycling Day event calendar, the green flyer, will be out at Yakult on the 11th, and then Camas, Richfield, the center in early May. And we have our Lechner Landfill tour, which I know some of you have signed up for Wednesday at 3:30, and we'll be meeting out at that location. And that's all in advance of the second Lechner Landfill open house, which is scheduled for April 23rd. And again, we'll be diving into all the Lechner details. We did also put in our grant application through Department of Ecology, and that was accepted. There are still back and forth in terms of getting the scope on a couple of details, but for the most part, it's in. And one component which is new of that grant is the latex paint recycling program that we are looking at getting going. We do have a meeting set up at the Jail Work Center on Wednesday. I don't have the time during the day. It's in the morning. So if anyone is interested in sitting down and being a part of that, I know, Don, at one point we were meeting on that. Certainly can send that around to let folks know. It's a pretty exciting opportunity. We'd love to have SWAC involvement. Our solid waste management plan, we did hear back from the WUTC, the Washington Utility Transportation Commission. They did accept our cost assessment report, so that's good news. And now we're just waiting on that last comment from Ecology. We've got interlocal agreements back from four of the cities, and Washougal is right behind. So we have Yakult, Washougal, Camas, Richfield, and LeCenter, and Battleground. And we're waiting on Vancouver. We're going to be working on a regional steering committee. And Rich, maybe in your update, you might give a teaser on that.
Yeah.
And then the rest we'll be diving into the Lechners is kind of our overview for today. There is also one flyer on the medication take-back event. That'll be April 23rd. We've got a number of partner locations where we'll be doing that event, and that's a great one. And the other big piece, and we'll be coming back with more information on this program. It's one of our big outreach efforts. On April 13th, we hit the road with our inspection crew, although we're not calling them inspections, and we're going to be looking into folks' carts and leaving educational information if we find inappropriate items being put in there.
Are we being singled out for this?
And it depends where you are. We pick 25 routes, which represents 20% of the county. So you might be. We're really excited about it. It's a big effort. It's a five-year effort. This is the first year's pilot, so we'll be fine-tuning as we go. We'll be doing a full-on presentation on how that goes once we've hit the streets.
That was one of the meetings I went to today, by the way.
Oh.
Rich,
my turn? Okay, your turn. So I got stuff to hand out. I think at the last meeting there was questions about the some of the recycling system. So I'm passing out what Waste Connections produces every fall. This is the latest version of the recycling refresher. And within it, it has a nice poster that kind of has details about what can go in the cart and what can't and so forth. And then to help you put that on your refrigerator, I'm giving you a take two, they're small, a couple of magnets
reminding you that cartons, you know, and milk cartons and juice boxes can be, aseptics can be recycled also in your cart. So use that to stick it to your refrigerator. And then also I'll let you know that the city's spring coupons have gone out, and they should be arriving. If you live in the city of Vancouver and you get a paper bill, you should be getting those today or tomorrow, probably Saturday. If you have an electronic bill, we sent an email out to folks in early March that if you'd like the coupon, since you don't get mailing every other month from Waste Connections, email us back, we'll fill in a form, and we'll send you a set of coupons. So this is what the coupons look like if you have an electronic bill, and those were mailed, I believe, the first? Yeah, yesterday. So those should be arriving also today or tomorrow. I can pass those around, but I have to get them back. So if you want to look at them, happy to share them.
If you don't get them back,
then I would be hitting you up for $75. That's the value. $25 per yard debris coupon, and tires can also, if you have four tires, can probably get shipped to it. So they are pretty valuable, and so we are a little stingy with them. We just get them out to be a city customer. You wanted me to touch on the interlocal, so Vancouver's and really all of the existing interlocals expire at the end of 2016. And Vancouver would like to see a little more formality to our regional solid waste steering committee system, which is included in all of the interlocals. And so we're going to use the next year and a half to fine-tune that. And our plan is to kind of work with the facilitator, work with the county and the other cities to kind of help put together that system to make sure that the regionalization approach is working well. So. Yes?
Fluorescent bulbs. It's really hard. I've noticed since I've been here trying to get rid of fluorescent bulbs. Is there any looking at some easier way to you can get rid of some of these bulbs?
You bet. Yeah, there's a new law that came into effect 2 years ago, and just this January they started a system to do. It's called light recycle. And I don't know if we have cards. I know Karen had a bunch of those cards. We could probably get them out to you.
Yeah.
So there, light recycle Washington. If you Google that, it will give you a website that tells you all the places in our community, and I think there's a dozen or more of them where they'll take back fluorescent lamps. I know Clark Public Utilities does that at their main office, the little office under the bridge, and I think out on 117th. And then there's, I think, probably the Lowe's, the Home Depot's, and then our transfer stations are also participating in the program. So there are limitations. But it's really any type of fluorescent lamp, whether it's a long lamp or a compact fluorescent or any other type of bulb. I think it's a limit of 10 per day, something like that. Yeah, Pete's gonna go to the wizard and kind of see what the what.
If I can spell fluorescent.
I know a lot of people just dump them because it's so hard to get rid of them. It's just not what we want.
So this is a program that's funded by. It's a product stewardship program. It's funded by the. Manufacturers, so they fund the program to have all of these sites accept up to 10, I think, per day from residences, not businesses, but from residences.
Sorry. Yeah, so it's a pretty extensive list.
And then the transfer stations are also in there. So.
And if you go to Clark Public Utilities, they give you a free light bulb back.
Yeah,
the little ones.
Little squiggles.
Yeah. And that's really
any
of those stores are open, but for anything there, all the pretty drive is always a good thing. Make sure they're open today or they're not closed.
They don't give you the big one.
I know Home Depot closes early. I think it doesn't even open. Okay.
Thank you.
I've got a Brother printer. Where am I supposed to throw away some of that whole electronic stuff?
You can go to Waste Wizard and ask it yourself. Or I think that probably Power Up would take it.
I'm going to embarrass you sometime. That's okay. Don't worry about it, but I will get these back. Now, where am I supposed to go?
Empower Up.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds like, between St. John's and St. James. I don't know how far north.
It's about in the 50s.
There you go.
little south of Minnehaha.
Yes.
That's for reusable electronics, right?
The power you already beat it.
Well, they want
this is a much used printer that my wife had replaced.
Okay. So they want any electronics.
I'm in the back seat of my car and I'm trying to find a place to dump it.
Even if it doesn't work, they'll still take it. Yeah.
They'll take it.
The transfer stations will take it too. Yeah.
Okay. We got the waste wizard open. You guys want me to look?
Look for printers.
Got it. Good. Let's just do it quick. Here we go.
Anything else, Rich?
That's it. That's all I got.
It was brought to my attention a couple months ago that Brandon Dick had not been at the meetings. And I talked to him about his attendance and the fact that he's a state legislator. And he really expressed an interest in staying on the committee, at least through his term this fall. And I was rather flippant when it first came up and said, I thought we gave our legislators kind of a free ride. And when I looked at it, I thought, he is doing a thankless job for not a whole lot of money up there. It pays a little bit better than this job does, but. So we talked about it, and he would like to stay. He would like to be excused for legislative duties, and I would like to make a motion to exempt him from the attendance rule when he's involved in legislative duties. That's my motion.
Can we look at the stuff that's going on, making any comments back to anybody? Will he make any comments, the stuff we're talking about and everything? Is he going to be able, without attending the meeting, to take a look at stuff and comment back to you or somebody else? Since
I've not gotten any comments back. He's on the mail distribution list for everything that we get.
He won't have time in the legislative sessions.
No.
There's so much going on. He just won't.
They're from dawn to late at night. Here they are.
What? I don't have a problem with it, but what do the regulations?
That's
the real problem.
Regulations require... I didn't print it, so I don't remember.
I've got it. I've got our rules.
But he's missed more than what the regulations. That's why it was brought to my attention. It's really our choice of whether we want to stretch the rules.
Well, what I'll bring to your attention is making amendments to the rules. And I'll just read to you what it says. Rules and procedures may be amended at any regular or special meeting of SWAC by a majority vote of the entire SWAC membership. Amendments should be submitted in writing for discussion prior to the meeting. Final action will not be taken until a subsequent meeting. That's the language in the rules.
Okay. Thank you for pointing that out, because I don't have a copy of it.
I got no problem.
No, that's great.
So we can amend it.
You can amend it, but you have to have all the members here to amend it.
All the members or majority?
The entire SWAC membership.
We never have entire SWAC.
I'm just.
I don't get what it says. Yeah.
Well, what is that again? Because I think it's the majority of the entire. So I think they just want to make sure it's five.
A majority vote of the entire SWAC membership. So you're interpreting it as a majority. Of the membership.
Right.
Yeah.
Not
necessarily
the membership.
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be a rare day.
So would you, as a group, like to have a written proposal?
Well, it should be. It doesn't say must or shall.
Yeah, just read
so it sounds like there's some discretion there. Should be submitted. It doesn't say must or shall. I'm not an attorney, but I play one on TV.
You're doing a good job.
Yeah, that's why when I sent that sheet out to everybody, I don't claim to be an attorney. No. I haven't sent sheet to the others.
For me personally, I'm okay doing it verbally and not in writing. And I'll go with that interpretation that a majority of the entire membership to make an amendment. I don't know where everybody else sits on that.
Any other comments or?
Well, I think we can make a motion on top of that or an amendment to waiver that particular portion. It has to be in writing and make that as an amendment to the wording that you had that that we should go ahead and allow him to continue. But I think we ought to mention the fact that somehow that in fact we are going to waive the letter requirement because we do have a good solid majority here tonight. And rather than prolong this and have to come back again next month, we could encompass it with an amendment. And so I want to amend the motion that we waive the letter requirement.
And my only additional comment would be, whatever amendment you have, I think you do need to reduce it to writing because it's ultimately going to end up in these rules and be here to guide us and those in the future.
You could add it written by now.
I'm not trying to be hard.
No. What I was looking for was an exception for one person in this particular circumstance, not as a... my thought process was for Brandon for this legislative session, which is not going to be done this month. It'll go into April.
Yep. May.
So maybe even May. So he'll be back maybe May, but June, July, August, 3 months. So
okay, I withdraw my amendment.
And what I would say is, if there's somebody in the future that is in a similar circumstance, an elected official, that a future SWAC would want that to apply to as well, let's create something that will fit that circumstance as well.
Okay. I mean, local elected.
Well, we would. State elected. It will be in the minutes, but you know, after it's a month away or something like that, you know, it's not going to be in the record anywhere. So are you talking about amending that for a one-time event?
No, I'm talking about amending this to address this issue now and going forward for anybody who is in that situation.
It doesn't just have to be a legislator.
No.
It could be somebody falling off the road.
These are the rules and procedures of the Clark County Solid Waste Advisory Commission. I read it correctly, and it's for us to amend.
Well, we have the authority to amend it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll volunteer to draft you some language that you can look at, and I'll send it to you in an email.
I'm not a big writer of stuff. I find it difficult to write.
This is a staff comment from someone who's done this for 1 or 2 years. Worked with a few SWACs. I agree with them that if you're going to do this, you do more of a blanket type.
Yeah.
One or two sentences, you know, by the majority, a state legislature could be, you know, because it's not going to be.
Could be an elected official from some other community that wants to serve here. Could be all kinds of, you know, circumstances.
That's great. I mean, you know. Then for going forward, it won't be an issue.
Mm-hmm. Draft it up and send it out, and that way we can vote on it.
Okay.
Great.
Because it said ask the voter to everybody before our meeting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's great. We can get it out, get it into an email, put it on the next month's agenda, and away we go.
I'll send it to everybody. Can you take a look at it? Any edits you've got, filter them back, and I'll try to incorporate it and send it out again.
Sounds good. Thank you. All right, with that, Mr. Mike Davis, for those of you that don't know him, Mr. Landfill. Yours, everyone.
What a moniker to wear.
And on the side, I also manage the solid waste system for the county, too. So, I haven't met you two gentlemen. I understand you're both new to the SWAC.
Yes.
Congratulations on your appointment.
Thank you very much.
This is Leichter Landfill. And for those of you who have not been around since the early times of Clark County, it was the primary landfill from about 1939 till it was closed in early 1991. There was quite the adventure getting it closed. The city and county joined forces to raise a great deal of money that was set aside in a reserve fund. They did so through rate bases, so it is actually administered by the county and the city jointly. The Leichner brothers have slowly stepped away from it. When we bought the site, they were relegated to a advisory role on the oversight committee. The oversight committee essentially consists of the city, the county, and the health department. And there is a consent decree that requires that the site be monitored, compliance monitoring plan be in place, a M&O plan be in place, and that all the applicable permits are in place. And here's the about the annual cost of the site, and the reserve fund is actually called the Financial Assurance Reserve Fund, or so if you hear me use the word FARF, that's what that means. And we run about $800,000 a year. We've got about enough money left in there to go about 10 more years, depending on if the costs start to decline, which we anticipate they were or they will. And as I just previously mentioned, that there were a series of regulatory orders that occurred starting in the late 80s. The first one was implemented when landfill gas was discovered in some of the homes on the east side. And about that time, the ecology got involved, and it eventually culminated in a consent decree being signed in 1996. And but these orders are what eventually set it on the path to being closed in the late 90s or the early 90s. Public health has an intergovernmental with Washington State Department of Ecology. They basically do the day-to-day compliance, and when we have a larger compliance issue, it gets kicked back up to the state. Southwest Clean Air Authority is responsible for the flare system and the emissions of the gases that are released at the landfill. We are well past the 20-year post-closure monitoring cycle. Now that it's that would have been 2011, so we're well into the next phase of this landfill. We have no idea when we will actually have no further action issued at this landfill. We anticipate that it's going to go on for quite some time, at least another decade before we get there with ecology. So one of the things the county did do was that we invested in an environmental pollution liability policy. It's got $40 million in aggregate coverage and $20 million per event. That was actually approved in the 11-12 budget, and it was a one-time cost for $387,000. And it covers any releases from the landfill itself or the site that might affect any of the homeowners or any of the businesses that are located near us.
Mike, who issued the policy?
I think it's...
Are they still in business?
Yeah, I'm probably not going to like what I have to say. I think it's ACE.
Okay.
Good question.
And yes, my background is in business finance, not garbology.
Okay, gotcha.
So that's why I know what went on with those guys. Anyway, first thing we did was a fatal flaw analysis, and that was to determine what the likely uses of the surrounding properties were, and the landfill. The landfill itself, one of the things that really came out of that is it's over the Troutville Aquifer, it's over some, you know, unstable strata, basically. And there's no bottom liner. It's settling pretty rapidly in a number of places. So the most likely use for the site is low-impact recreation. And so that came out of this initial fatal flaw analysis, and it also started to take a hard look at the properties in which we're really concentrating on redevelopment, which is the what we'll hear called interchangeably the Kosky properties, or now for the fancied up name, Leichner Campus. It's called the Kosky properties because it was purchased from the Kosky family. And here it is down in the south.
That one, 35 acres.
At the time of closure, they thought that the plume of VOCs were so significant that we were going to have to build a pump and treat facility down at this end. And so they acquired the Kosky farm for that purpose. And as time went on and the cap was laid over the top, the gas system kicked in, the VOCs declined rapidly, and now they're almost undetectable. So that gave us the opportunity to start taking a look at this property for redevelopment. It's clean, light industrial property for the most part. There is a little bit of issues towards the next parcel, and we'll discuss those a little bit later. So we purchased the full 120 acres for $1.5 million. The $350,000 for 11 acres came from the road fund. The remainder came from the FARF. The Kosky itself is valued roughly at around $4 or $5 million. So you're going to see that in some of these reports that are coming out later or on the internet for your review now. And so it was a pretty good deal, even though everybody kept asking me at the time, why are you buying a landfill? And in fact, in the negotiations, the landfill was valued at somewhere between $0 and $980,000, and we told them zero. And so basically we got them down to this price, and part of the reason that we were able to do that deal is there was basically a $1 option to purchase the property at some point way out in the future when no further action was authorized. And by then, the Leichner family would long be in the ground. They realized that. And so we came to an agreement earlier on based on appraisals and negotiations as to what that value was today. And that's where we landed on this purchase price. So what we moved into after that is the master planning process. And we went out and hired a firm who has done this in several locations before, Ball Foster Longy, right down the road here. I've been impressed with their skill sets, and they've done an excellent job so far of getting us to this point. And basically, this is the flow of where we're at. We initially did the existing conditions analysis, a realtor's workshop, then the first open house where we took comments from the local neighborhood. I think we sent out 1,250 notices of the surrounding neighborhood, and we had probably about 100 people show up at that initial one. And then we moved on to the design charrette phase, which is where you kind of do some mock-ups of what maybe the road systems might look like out there. And then the next phase was to take a look at the market analysis of each of these different options. And in between there, that open house and somewhere in this phase, we actually received a grant from the Washington State Department of Ecology to research the adjoining Fleischer property. The Fleischer property was known to be somewhat contaminated with PCBs. The department offers a grant that's called the Integrated Planning Grant that takes a look at these brownfields and potential to integrate them into a master plan of a larger site, such as the Kosky. So that's the Fleischer property. And actually, let's pass these. There's a good map on the back side of this. Kind of shows how the two parts sit together.
Let's get back to this.
Pete, would you send me a copy of this PowerPoint presentation?
Yes, of course.
Okay, so one thing I want to make clear right off the get-go to everyone, that master planning is much like throwing darts at a board in a sense. This comes from Brian Carlson, who's also on the review committee.
Right.
But it does give a developer a good sense of what's out there and what can be done and what the lots could potentially look like at a site like this and what the roads could look like. Mm-hmm. And that also has given us an opportunity to plan for utilities and stubbing the utilities. The main up north-south road right there is 94th Avenue. It's scheduled to be widened this summer. And I've been working with the 94th Avenue engineering team to make sure that we've got the utilities in place, sewer, water, telecommunications, natural gas, all available to the site and ready to go. So that's all kind of part of this process of the master planning. We've come to the point where we have an idea of what that site might look like. And some of the main ideas of it, obviously, is to encourage jobs and on this site. And if you do get a chance to read the market analysis, you're going to be... I was surprised at the amount of jobs with the ripple effect within the community that this can produce. And then again, if we're looking at this in phases, as I had mentioned, if we move forward with acquiring and cleaning up the cost of properties, that would be phase two, and we kick off sort of a second round of enhanced master planning for that. Basically, you would just be adding to the industrial area of the site. And then the third phase is the redevelopment of the landfill. And
where's the 35 acres? What part of that land?
The part named Leichner Campus.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and that's what I say. It's the fancy name is now Leichner Campus. We've always called it Kosky. So what we anticipate is the next, as we mentioned earlier, 99th is going to go through sometime around 2018 to 2020. There's some serious stormwater issues we've got to work through. And about that time, we hope to be ready to maybe convert some of the landfill over to a park area, walking parks, dog parks. And so that would be phase three of the master planning, and we've got to go through another phase like this. So there's an open house, April 23rd, 4 to 7, Church of Christ. As you're coming down the path and heading east, the Church of Christ is off to your left. That's just before you get the light on 94th. So here's the Fleischer. A very interesting property. It's 9.9 acres or so. Like I mentioned, it's adjacent to the landfill. It was previously used for agriculture and fertilizer processing by a guy named Drassler, who was a real character. He was taking clarifier solid from Boise Cascade, mixing it with manure, I assume, and creating a product that was used for fertilizer. So what he was getting, so it's basically like short paper fibers and, animal waste composted. We have never actually identified the actual source of the PCBs because each PCB has what they call an allofluor number, and it's a unique identifier of its chemical basis. And the allofluors that would have come out of clarifier solids at that time would have come from carbonless paper, of all things, had PCBs in it, and some printing inks. And so that would work its way through the system and end up in the solids. And they have, once again, they have this very distinct allofluor number. The allofluor number that we come up with out here, hydraulic fluid. So what I suspect, this has been my theory all along, and I've got a few years of hazard waste too, that they used oil for dust suppression, and then he composted on top of that, used it to kill all the weeds. That's what I think happened. So the grant was for $200,000. We are 80% of the way through our grant cycle now, and where we're at is, and we'll go into this a little bit, is actually doing some internal mock-ups of what the Fleischer property could look like along with, you know, joining with the Koski property or the Leichter campus, and it's sort of the mock designs that we're looking at. And so where we want to get is to a place where we can show this to the college and what we could achieve at this site if you give us enough grant money to clean it up. And then we are also presently having an appraiser appraise the site, and then we would enter in negotiations with the landowner to determine if we could get it at a reasonable price. The cost of this thing is very upside down for the cleanup options that we're seeing. The property's worth about $1 million. If we just capped it with dirt, which is not going to be ecology's choice, we're probably pretty close to that. If we cleaned up the front third, do we have a slide on this one, Pete?
I don't think we do.
Yeah, that was it, right there.
No.
That's it? Yeah, that's what I'm looking at. So the one at the top, or number two, is capping of impact soils. That's the closest probably to the property value we're going to see back. The frontage is worth quite a bit because it's light industrial frontage, and so it's about $5 a square foot. But as you get back, it becomes less expensive. Full-on excavation is not going to happen unless ecology gets highly generous. It's three times the value of the property. The most likely I see is this alternative three, is which you take the first front third of the property and dig it up, haul it off, and then cap the back. It's what I call the lumber mill option. So that you'd have your offices up front and then a yard in the back. And the two types of caps can be used, clean soil or about 4 inches of pavement. So that's, you know, some type of trucking or facility would be excellent for this. The proximity to 205, you're about, I think, 2 miles from 205, something like that. So it's, you know, Waste Connections is right next door, and that's one of the reasons they're located there.
Mike, how many acres are you talking about?
For cleanup?
Yeah.
So if we got 99, we'd probably do about three.
Okay.
That's quite a few square feet for an office structure and parking. And then if you've got the area in the back for a yard, I think it's doable.
So what do you do in the back? I mean, you know, I see your asphalt and stuff, so what are you doing if you're not?
We would you'd cap it to prevent water from running through it. And, you know, that's one of your two cap options, is a foot of clean soil or 4 inches of pavement. So this is what's on the website for review. And the first one was the reuse analysis, and it kind of goes through the market assessment. Then the existing site condition, so it talks about utilities in that section. And then there's the environmental engineering summary. Oh, wait, site conditions. Did this get put up there, right? There should be... That's...
Market assessment.
Yeah, I just don't know. Get back on that one, Pete.
This one?
Yeah. I don't know if these got labeled correctly. That's site conditions, okay. Oh, yeah, these are correct. Just wanted to make sure we got it up. And then existing conditions is the... this is the one where all the utilities are listed right here. And what's interesting about this one is we did a developer's workshop in this one, so we had developers from all over the metro region come in, and that's in your first summary of the process. So it's pretty interesting. Okay, it was interesting for me. I don't want to say it was interesting for everybody else.
Is there anything we want to look in at this?
Well, I would suggest you kind of browse through it, and if you've got any questions, ask me about it. I think the one that we really want to take a look at is the market assessment, because that kind of gives you some of the... gives you a little better idea of what the options look like. So here's the map that you've got right here. And you can see the 99th, and to the north of that is actually some property. It's about 10 or 8 acres, I think. It was actually donated to us, and it's residential today. It's landlocked. It may get eaten up by the 99th Street project.
Is that part of the 120?
Yeah, it's part of it. Actually, it's 127 now, but anyway.
Mike, where are you going with this? Does this committee or our organization have anything to vote on or to pass going there?
Yeah.
Or is this just information for us?
It's information for right now, but where we're going is that we have a preferred option. And the preferred option was selected by our review committee, which consisted of community development director, planning department, Keith Henderson, the public works department, Brian Carlson, and Don Benton from the environmental services. They were the review committee that selected a preferred option. And eventually they'll want to get you to the place after you heard the public comments, that, seeing what that preferred option is, seeing what, that can look like in the future. Yes, you will be making a recommendation to the board.
Okay, it'll be in the form of a recommendation rather than any administrative things like a regulation or something.
Yes, exactly.
So it would be a recommendation that
basically we go forward with a selected option. Okay.
I just wondered where we're going with it as far as
that's a legitimate question, because I'll tell you, this has been something that we've bounced around a little bit. The Fleischer's a little clearer to me is, should we go forward and clean it up or shouldn't we? But this one is a little different because it is solid waste. It's a redevelopment of a solid waste facility. But, the role here is, is not as clear as, say our basic planning functions. Should we build a transfer station or should we not? Which I'll be coming back to you eventually with too.
I'm looking forward to that.
And there of those six options, two and five were selected. Is that up on the web yet?
Yeah, that's in that. That was in the one where the summary of the master, or no, it's the market analysis.
It is in this one?
Market analysis.
Let's just pull down.
Scroll on down.
Just to give you an idea of how they.
Wait a minute. This isn't the right one. That's what I'm saying. We need to.
There's your table.
But those aren't the six.
They're duplicates. Somehow the reuse analysis got Cindy stuck up the reuse analysis in there. I knew something looked funny when I looked at that. Well, I'm glad we caught it now before we sent out all the information.
Okay.
Let's go back to the. You just clicked on this one, right, Pete? This one right here. You clicked on that one.
No, let's go there now.
Jason. There we go, phase two market analysis. Scrolling down. So there's six options. So here is planning option one. And you can see what I'm saying. You're just breaking up these parcels, designing the road. Here's Fleischer. And in this, you can see that we did Koski only. And then we did three with Koski and three with Fleischer. So that's the first one. And this one got shot down because of its proximity between a Waste Connections south access gate. There's too close of a space. And so transportation would not allow this one to move forward, was the main reason. So this one is number two. We're going to come back to this. This one actually, as you go through this planning, is probably the best one that came up, and it provides for the most large lots. Three was, I kind of liked it because you had this nice loop in here, and you had a good frontage on the Fleischer, but there's problems that came up with this piece too. So now you move into the options with Koski, and you can see in this one, they basically just extended the cul-de-sacs up into Koski and split it into three, but you still had only one real large lot back in the back. And so, let me get back down. Two and five are basically the same.
and they offered these two large lots on McCoskey, but once again, you get two large frontage lots, two behind it, and two back here.
And when you see it built out, it is a lot of...
Yeah, and I'll hand this out here in just a little bit, kind of this real high-level build-out of this. And then six had the same problem as three. Now we're even closer. These axes are right next door to each other, and there wasn't enough distance between the two of them, so this one got kicked out. And I think this is probably going to be one of the more popular ones with the neighbors, but or 90th.
But at the open house, they're going to see two and five.
They're going to see two and five. So what I go on down then to the, one of the tables that Pete, and I'll show you where you want to kind of, he goes through all these methodologies and assumptions, which is his job. He's an economist.
This one?
I think that's it right here. Let's see what the bottom is. That's my bottom line. Yeah, that's it. So this is one you want to take a hard look at, and you can see, you know, one of my roles is I'm the fiduciary cop for the FARF fund. So I'm the guy saying we need to get the most money out of this that we can. And you know, but there's other considerations like the neighborhood and other things that come into play. But you can see two and five had the highest net of both options. And a lot of that has to do with the, you know, the lot sizes and some of the other options. They had so much road surface, you lost buildable property. And I would really urge you to browse this particular one. And so you're familiar with it as you move forward in your decision-making process. Because this is probably... you know, this is the important information that we utilize at the review committee to kind of come up with options two and five. And one
and four are pretty close, right?
Yeah, and one of the other things you can look at, see, three and six were a kind of a campus design, too. And the best one to kind of liken that to would be, what's the name of the one over the Waste Connections is in now?
It's East Ridge.
East Ridge. On 117, and it took years for that thing to build out. But the demand in this county is for industrial property. There is very little industrial property in this county. I went through this when I was talking about the, you know, siting the transfer station. It's unbelievable for a county that's this developed not to have the industrial base that we need. And this is something that can add this and add jobs. And let me see.
Mike, the CRDC has a committee on that, which is Land for Jobs. And they're going through every place. It's a white spot in the road trying to...
Yeah, and this was actually on one of the lists. It was like number 13 or something a couple of years ago or something like that.
I haven't seen the recent report from that committee, but everybody's looking...
So
we're bounded around the south and the west with the river.
Yeah.
We got a county to the east and a county to the north, and that's us.
And battleground, it's surrounded by wetlands.
Okay.
So anyway, scroll down a little bit further and see if we can get the jobs page. Yeah, I think so. So here's another thing that was really kind of important to us, and I mean, if you look at adding, you know, if it's campus, yeah, you get more jobs in, but it, like I say, if you look at the build-out time on it, I just don't think that it's going to be viable there. You get, you know, 1,265 jobs out of that just for the Koski property with the direct and indirect, and over 1,700. Almost 1,800 if you include Fleischer. So it's, that shocked me. I mean, I was expecting a pretty good number in the hundreds off this property. I just didn't expect to see that many jobs off this acreage.
The direct number?
Well, the direct number I thought was going to be about half that, and we'd be about, you know, 700 total with the indirects. So it's pretty amazing, and Eric Covey did this, and he's a pretty well-known guy in the community. So, I'm relatively confident, you know, that he's on the ball. But you can see that, you know, the impacts for overall wages, you know, are somewhere, you know, $52,000. So you're getting into, you know, family wage earning jobs at that pace.
So that depends on who buys it and what
this
use
is the,
it is. So.
This is the whole dot. And I think that when we went through the developers, it was an eye-opener for me. Because it's, you know, if you get a whale, that's that one user. I mean, the tech firm or whatever. That's
another band field or something like that.
Yeah. Otherwise, this will take longer. You know, the other thing that you need to look at, like I said, is build-out discussions in the years it takes to build these things out. You know, 9-10 years isn't going to be uncommon, but, you know...
Is that when you retire?
Close.
Couple of questions. So, for the Fleischer property, is the expectation that it will be sold?
Well, yes. They'll clean it up and sell it. And let's go back to the Fleischer piece real quick. We'll kind of start to talk a little bit more about what's going on with Fleischer.
And my second question is going to be, to the extent you're going to do cleanup and your the preferred alternative is adopted, are you then going to deed restrict it so that people are not disturbing that soil?
Oh, indeed, yeah. There'd be a restricted covenant. In fact, the entire Leichner site is under a restricted covenant.
Okay.
Even the cost. So Fleischer, how it would work... is we would probably enter into some form of a pre-purchaser consent decree. So we wouldn't get sued, Fleischer's wouldn't get sued, and simultaneously we'd have the financing for the grants lined up, and it'd be like a three-way transaction. And so we'd have that all in place before we would even touch this thing. So there should be a couple of... get through the boring stuff, and there should be a couple of tables in here for you to kind of look at. Have you come with the figures yet? Because it might be the... There should be two of them to show the areas of contamination. These are all the tables. Okay, I think if you're getting there, Pete. There we go. We're getting there. Oh, okay. So here was the sampling criteria we used right here. We gridded it out first. And you can see there's an old barn and an old house on here. And that would all have to be grubbed out. We keep on rolling down so we can kind of... And these are the test pits. Oops. Go back up just a little bit. Those are the test pits. So we had a gridded pattern, and then we did test pits. And we did some test pits down here, too, just to see if there was extent to the south. Some of the older pictures of the site, you can see the clarifier solids. They're bright white in some of these old black and white photos, so they show up pretty well. And so this one is the should be the depth of the clarifier solids, if I recall correctly. And you can see we've got several hot spots. It's one in the middle. But from here, this way is not that bad. And you'll get, and you can see the fill depths right here off to the right. And there's a pretty good depth of it back here, which surprised me, because you really didn't see that in the photos.
So the darkest color represents...
Darkest is the deepest, yeah. So it's about 2 feet is the deepest you're going to see, 1.75. And we did test pits. You see the deepest depth of the test pits right here.
Where's the PCB?
And the PCB is concentrations are based on color, with the darkest the worst.
It's all over.
They're all over, but if you look from, you know, this front third, you've only got a few hot spots. And so, I mean, the white areas are the best. And so, you know, you're looking at, you get down just a short distance, and you get quickly into the white in the front depths. You do have this one little hot spot in the corner over here. It's some of these others where you're down several feet in the back that are kind of concerns, and some of these are right in this. There's a bad one right there. So we did find some just on the inside of the fence here, and like I said, one of them was right there. And we will probably propose institutional controls there, pave it. I think one of the things that's coming out of the 94th Avenue design is that the only place that sewer would be stubbed is right about down here off of 90th. So we're going to maintain this. This is the landfill road right here. We'll maintain that as an easement and then run the sewer right up that easement.
Now every one of those spots there, are they vented to the atmosphere?
No, this is just open ground.
How do they get rid of the escaping gas?
There is no escaping gas. So PCBs are relatively stable. They don't travel readily. So it's what we refer to in the vernacular as a dirt job. Basically, you come and dig it out.
This is not like our methane or something like
no.
that?
It doesn't decompose, and that's the problem. It's persistent chemical. So, you know, you've got all the analytical results, and it's kind of, they go through this whole, this is all the analyticals. It's all available if you're interested in it. And this report went up to Ecology, so they're very aware of the situation. And we do not, typically this would be referred to as an RIFS, Remedial Investigation Feasibility Study, if you had a cleanup action plan, which we do not yet because that is yet to be negotiated. So I think that kind of covers the highlights of this, and this gets into more like my
mind.
I looked at all of this online. Nice. And thank you for the
That's points. How when I start to look at my annual reports for a year, my eyes just glaze over.
But I can't say I memorized it.
Yeah.
You're talking about a cleanup plan. What will that entail?
Well, so essentially, a landfill, the levels of contamination are low enough that, you know, that if the soils are somewhat mixed up a little bit, it'll get it down below levels where you can take it to just your basic Subtitle D landfill. Potentially Wasco County or even Cowles County for that matter. It's not so hot that we have to go to a Kim Waste landfill, Subtitle C, what that would be. And so I think we're in pretty good shape as far as that's concerned. My personal opinion is the costs are high, but we wouldn't know that until we went out to bids on it.
Yeah, did you have any engineering estimates on that?
Those are engineering estimates from Al Foster, yeah. So that's one of the things that they also do is cleanups or oversee them.
Same as they cap the landfill, a small one, they built park and stuff like that. They did all the wonderful testing. And then the kids started getting sick in the park and they did some more testing and they found some stuff that they should have got rid of them and all of that. So the thing is that $40 million policy part of the thing.
Well, no, actually it would have to leave the site. And so, you know, Gasworks Park had something like this similar happened in Seattle, actually. And so obviously we'd be doing a lot of testing before we'd be letting people on. And the main thing is we're years away from letting anybody on a landfill. The primary reason is, and you can't really see it in here, but if you look at this right here, that is the gas piping and it's all on the surface.
So is that flared?
There used to be two flares, we're down to one flare now.
Do you ever think of putting a generator in?
It's at 120 CFM, so it's just not enough juice anymore. It started out in the thousands, but back then the energy wasn't as desirable as it is today. And that's the typical gas curve. And so we're down here, and I think that'll probably be the legacy, is that'll be the last thing that we're doing is gas. Gas and sediment. So I think the landfills, what will happen is that if we sell this property, all that money has to go back into the FARF. So that'll boost the FARF back up. Let's say we get 4 million and it gets us out, you know, another 6-7 years. Plus, we can take some of that money to bury the lines, regrade the site, and make sure it is safe. If there's any problems with the liners, we'd identify it at that point. And so that is a study that I've got going this summer. So we're going to have an idea what that cost is going to entail. But obviously, until we do something with this property, and I want to pass these around now because this is sort of the preliminary, conceptual.
Are these like Rich's coupons? They got to come back?
Well, it's, you know, these are just like draft versions. There'll be a board. There'll be a board out there that has all the trees on it. It makes it look nice and snazzy. And then there'll be a bird's eye view kind of looking down 88th at the buildings and whatnot. And so you can see where all the vegetative buffers are. I think the biggest issue with this is that a lot of the neighbors were told that this was going to be a golf course or a park, even though it's been zoned light industrial from the get-go. And so some of the neighbors are obviously questioning the zoning. And at the May meeting, Gary Albrecht, who's the representative of the community planning on the review committee, will be here to kind of explain the county's policies on that. And they call it a no net loss policy. So in other words, if I've got 30 acres of light industrial and I want to change it to residential, I got to find 30 acres of light industrial somewhere else. And so to make up for it. And so it's not likely that in the situation that we're in, that we're going to give up, you know, 1,500 jobs for a one-time, you know, payout. And I'll be real frank, if you look at the reuse analysis, you're going to see that switching it over residential has the highest square foot value. But that, in the greater scheme of selecting what to do with this property, one, it's not going to happen because of no net loss policy, and two, they're one-time jobs, one-time tax producers. That's it. So, I mean, that's not really what the goal of the light industrial property is. So anyway, this is sort of the conceptual option. And we're only doing Koski for this open house. And the reason being is we're well down the road with Fleischer and we didn't want to.
And that's option two.
So this is option two. Option five looks identical. So that's one of the beauties of option two is with this cul-de-sac design, you can still access these two Fleischer properties from the south. Fleischer's got a general residential access that will be provided from the 94th Avenue widening, but it does not have a commercial access. At the south, where 88 meets up with this property, we've already planned for commercial access. The majority of the utilities are going to be stubbed right there, with the exception of sewer. Gas is available, but it'll be a directional drilling job for that. Communications are available right there. So I suspect that's going to be the hub. It'll be set up for signals right there also, because at some point we reach a threshold where 94th needs signals.
Signals right?
Right there at 88. So that is the primary access. And it gives access, the best access to these back parcels and uses the least amount of property. You can see kind of the puffy little clouds down here to the south. That's the non-dolled up version of the vegetative barrier between the neighborhoods to the south. And then the same thing along to the far east. If you can note that you see these grid lines, it's a pretty steep drop on that east end. And so the houses are about 30 feet above the ground level. So they're kind of looking down on the roof.
LUMAC headquarters.
One of the things that I do plan to do after this master planning process is start investing in trees along the east side. Get them planted soon, get them started. I mean, it could be years before somebody comes along and buys this. And maybe by then those have taken hold. And so I've talked to Julie about this already. So you can see that potentially some very large buildings can go in these lots. And if you take a building A and just transfer it to the north, That's about a perfect fit for the front of Fleischer. So you can have almost a 50,000 square foot office building or building in there. I mean, there's a lot of room out here.
Getting back to Bill's question too about where we're taking this group, can you talk about the distinction? All of this area in the landfill is in that financial reserve, insurance reserve fund, paid out of different fund, but this one is not, and that we actually do have oversight on that one.
Well, we don't have oversight. Not, we don't own it, but
yeah, this is
the part. If we go. If staff comes to you and recognizes that we've negotiated this deal with the Fleischers, we've negotiated this deal with the Ecology, and here's what this deal is, then any of the money to do this is actually going to have to come out of the Regional Solid Waste Fund. And so this is where you're definitely going to come in and say, yay, nay.
One of those price tags was $1.8 million.
Yeah, but...
But again, we can.
My push point on this is 900,000. That's about where I would go on this. And maybe that leaves 100,000 for the family, because the property's worth about $1 million. I'll have a better figure on that. But if we're into it for more than 900,000, it's not worth it because it's only worth $1 million. So who's going to buy it?
Right. Who's going to buy it at $1 million when they've got it? How much of the remediation?
Yeah, well, no, but I'm saying that's what the front third remediating and the back half.
And then that's the grant money that comes through.
Yeah, so
private parties can't
get it. So
exactly.
That's the key thing.
We're the broker.
The remedial action grants are only available against municipalities. So let's say we do the 1-8, plan. Then we get 900 in grants and we'd be out 900. Ourselves, plus whatever we have to pay the Fleischers. And that's kind of where I come up with that. They might get 100 grand out of it, they might get 50, they might get nothing out of this. I mean, the original starting point is we're so upside down with this, and is that do you want to give it to us? Get out from underneath it. I don't know if that's realistic for them or not. That's where we're starting. And I'll be real frank about it. To make this work and pencil out, you have to kind of go through the, this document to see what I'm talking about. We really have not to have a bunch of money into buying this property because there's not a lot of money coming back out.
So that's the key one, the market analysis,
yeah.
Like your site reuse right there.
And it was part of the decision process of not, at this point of master planning, not taking that to the public because we're just not close enough to even say, yeah, this is what it might look like with Fleischer. I mean, we'll come back later and talk about that if we decide we're going to buy it. But it's we're at least 6 months out from getting there.
How many of them are involved in this? In other words, on the sellers, how many people are involved in that? How many?
Oh, family members?
Yeah.
Bonnie, the mother, owns it still. I don't know what her health is. I generally deal with her daughter, who I think is the executor, and Jane, so I'm not sure what the spread is after that. I do know there's other Fleischers related in the area. The husband passed on a number of years ago, and they ended up buying it not knowing it was contaminated, and they had no insurance that was available. So, they can't do anything with it. And that's where the public works directors, or the county directors got, and Brian got to, was this is going to be a blight in between us and Waste Connections if the county doesn't get involved. And it will stay that way. Because who's going to do this when these numbers are so upside down? So that's kind of where I'm starting with it, but we will continue to get you more information as we sit down with Ecology and go over all of this and how it can fit into this integrated master planning. So what we are doing with Moll Foster is we will be, for internal use, coming up with what it could possibly look like integrated into this and all the values of it, and then start to talk to them about what can you do with this for grants. In some cases, they've actually come up as high as 70%. And I think the Camas Hamilton Mill redevelopment for Port Camas Jewel, they came up. And so that's kind of the negotiations. You know, the base rate is 50%. If they can get us higher, that helps the pencil out. The less we buy it for, it helps the pencil out. And the plan we select helps the pencil out. And all that is negotiated between with the Fleischers or WDOP. So it's going to be a... I'm not foreseeing this coming back to you real quickly. The Leichner Campus, Laskowski property, will be back to you with a full slip presentation from Mall Foster next month. And they'll kind of go back over how the integrated planning grant works. And Jim Mall and Seth Otto is the Seth is actually project manager, but Jim is I think he's VP for the firm. And I'm hoping Jim can come because he's really articulate in the way he explains IPG and some of the things that they have done with brownfields. So that's kind of my spiel tonight.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been busy.
And we are lucky to have Mike, and he's put in a lot of years and a lot of institutional knowledge here.
Yeah, the history here helps understand what today's problems are.
Yeah, it's the man you're replacing was the real historian out here. He was here when it was closed, Gary Dickens. So, but you know, definitely it's at that point. You know, it's where you want you involved and you want to know what you think about it. And like I said, I am forewarning you that you know we may have some residents that have their opinions on this. This would be close to them. But I wasn't the one that said it's going to be a park or a golf course. And I, over the years, I've gotten these questions, and the first thing I tell them is, yeah, maybe the landfill someday, but not down to the south because it's light industrial property, and you should be aware of that. Someday something will be built there, and that someday is coming.
And 88 is coming through too.
And yeah, as 99th comes through off of 503 117, that's going to create the circular pattern, and that's what the widening of from 94th to 99th is all about. Is that that'll create another alternative route off of instead of pattern.
Yeah.
And it's really going to impact this neighborhood. Probably a lot more than any development that we're proposing. You know, I really do foresee that the houses that exist between on 94th between Patton and 88th will go away, and it'll look like what it looks like in South Patton there, where it's become more quickie mart oriented and commercial. I think that's the way it'll go. There's already two churches. The WDF is planning to build their offices on the corner there, Patton and 94. So you really, I believe over time that whole stretch will, you know, it's just the way things go. You get that much traffic, it becomes more valuable as commercial and it gets rezoned. So that's the way I think it's going to go. But for now, I think the folks that live on 86th and this is 104th Court or something on the backside are going to, they're going to have their words.
Yeah.
So, that's my spiel. Any other questions? Well, I appreciate you listening.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Hopefully I didn't bore you too bad.
No, very interesting.
So who's going to, any of you coming out to the tour? You are? Good.
Done.
I think the thing that strikes most people is when they see the picture, they don't realize it's over 2.5 miles or 3 miles around the site. And it's big. And that's the thing that people are pretty, you know, surprised when they see it. You look at it from the road because it's tucked back. You can't really see it. But once you get out there, it's quite a bit bigger than it looks.
Then when you look at the north side where they want to run the street through there, when we stopped last time and took a look at it, everybody just shakes their head. I mean, it's a swamp land.
I like to use the word technically challenged for that.
Okay, technically challenged. it is a technical challenge.
Sometimes there's water at the bottom of the hole there, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's a water table right there. So what they did in the north and in the south where that steep end is, they used that as a burrow area for the landfill. They dug it all out, and that's what part of the cap is. And so it's below grade in that area, and then they routed all the stormwater to the north, and that's right where 99th is going through. And I had the engineer out there the other day, and
did you send him to shake his head?
He did. He actually goes, "Oh man, there's a lot of water."
It's a
big hole. My role in that particular road project is, the stormwater permit, negotiating all that work. So that'll be interesting for me. That'll be the close to retirement, or maybe I'll want to retire after we go through it. So like I said, we'll be back in May with a little more information on the open house and what we found on that. The next phase of where we're at with the master planning is called disposition analysis. And that's where we discuss about, how are we going to get, I don't want to get rid of it, but market this for these properties. And so we should have a little bit more information on that, and Jim can explain it better than I can. So that's the last phase, and then the planning piece, and then we start taking it up through the political process.
This, you all don't have any plans for moving out of there in the future, right? In the near future, or in the long range?
No, that is a side note, so I will let you know since the transaction's complete. They had been in long-term negotiations with the Leichners also, and they purchased that site from them.
Oh.
So they are in it for the long haul. Their plan is also to... I think there's some triggers that they need to get to, but they're going to eventually master plan that site for their uses and determine what they need as we move. On the hauling side, the county's going to push real hard for, switching the recycling fleet over to CNG. And so that's, they'll be... requirements for maintenance on CNG trucks, they have higher fire standards, H occupancies almost, and so, or I think it might even be an H, and so they're going to have to build a new shop if we go that route, and so that's all in the works.
Thought I was going to be, but not bad.
Good. Good.
Great. Any other comments from the audience? Anybody else? Meeting is adjourned.
Oh, yeah, I got it.
Yeah, I was surprised with that jobs number. 50 jobs. With all the indirects.
And they still have their generator.
Wow. Like I say, though, it's all with the buyer.
I know.
You get somebody in there that wants a transshipment type of a warehouse.
Yep.
You're not going to have that type of density in your employer.
That's why
I just did a welcome aboard, welcome to the neighborhood. We went down off of 205 fourth plane, and that's what they have, a big warehouse in there. They're going to bring stuff into there and then transship it out. And so that's not as far as employees per square foot, and not very much. Depending on your use, building use. It's all, I guess, on the computer.
Yeah.
Hey, Pete, if you'll send me that PowerPoint.
I got it in my notes.
Always a pleasure to see you.
Keep talking, I think I'm recording.